So Arnie asked me to talk to you about what have we learned from California biomonitoring. Can we apply this to Vietnam? So I'm going to talk about biomonitoring for dioxins, but also for other persistent organic pollutants, POPs. And this is my disclosure. I have no disclosures. So using Agent Orange for about this 10 years in Vietnam has devastated certain areas of the country and affected lots of people there. And according to the Vietnamese Red Cross, over 1 million people in Vietnam have disabilities that could be associated with Agent Orange. So that's what happens with wars. This is a picture of a warning sign. Apparently it says contaminated area near the Da Nang airport. And what we know that the food web has been contaminated with TCDD, the major component of the Agent Orange, and the most toxic dioxin. And having contaminated food, you know, fish and other products, results in high body burdens in the affected areas. Not all of Vietnam, but certain affected areas. But what about other chemicals? So yes, TCDD we know, but what else may be happening in a country like Vietnam? So I'm going to give a little bit background about what are persistent organic pollutants, what do we mean by biomonitoring, and our studies in California, and then try to see if can we recommend anything from what we learned in California that could be applied in Vietnam. So the persistent organic pollutants, we can talk about dioxins and furans, and we heard a lot already. These are formed inadvertently. Nobody makes dioxins. So even in the Agent Orange, it's an impurity. And in Seveso, it was, again, it's a in chemical synthesis, inadvertently you can have a dioxin formed. On the other hand, PCBs are industrial chemicals that were extensively used, and organochlorine pesticides were used in agriculture. Neither of these classes are currently in use. In contrast, flame retardants, and we'll talk a little bit about those, like the PBDEs and others, are still in use. What they have in common is that they all are persistent. They can bioconcentrate in the food web, and their degrees of toxicity varies between classes. And just the only chemistry I'll give you, these are structures to show that they're pretty similar. The dioxins, furans, chlorinated biphenyls, and the phenyl ethers. So they have the two phenyl groups and the oxygens and a lot of halogens, chlorines here or bromines with the PBDs. So what do we mean when you say biomonitoring? Basically, we measure chemicals or their metabolites in biospecimens. This can be blood, urine, milk, hair, anything. When we measure something in a biospecimen, we can't tell where it came from. It could be from what we ate, what we drank, what we inhaled, or what we touched. And then how do you explain having something measured in your body? There's no action level for most, except for lead and mercury maybe. There's no really action level. Some of them shouldn't be there at all, but we don't know what action level should be. But biomonitoring, bottom line, is it provides data on trends, either geographical trends or time trends, health effects possibly, and interventions. If you intervene and stop something, or if you introduce a new chemical, would you be able to see it in biospecimens? So this is a very simplistic way of saying that we may have a source, and somehow the chemicals from this source have to travel and come in contact with the person. And even the contact itself, the chemical has to cross barriers, cell membranes or alveoli or skin, get into the blood where we can measure the internal dose, but the action takes place at the target organ, and that's the biologically effective dose. A little more complicated picture here is that we can be exposed through ingestion, inhalation, or dermal exposure. And again, chemicals, depending on the solubility and partitioning, can end up in different tissues and can be stored in different, like adipose is a good depot for lipophilic compounds. What they have in red are different matrices from feces and urine, so blood, exhaled air, adipose, milk. These are commonly measured. This is commonly tested for different chemicals that may be partitioning there. So we have a lot of information and a lot of methodologies now for this. This is a textbook case for me on what the biomonitoring can do. This is from NHANES trying to plot blood lead coming down in different units along with the lead in gasoline. So when lead was removed from gasoline, the same years, blood lead dropped. So this is the value, the predictive value of having, you know, see how having a public health intervention has an effect on body burdens. So I work for the state of California, so I'm a state employee, and our state was the first program to start a biomonitoring program, legislatively made. And the goal of this biomonitoring program is to determine the levels of environmental chemicals in a representative number of Californians and look at trends, geographic time trends, and assess the effectiveness and efficacy of public health interventions and regulatory actions. This is a new program, but I'm not going to talk about this because the data are still getting collected. But what I'm going to talk about is what we knew at the time of biomonitoring, when we passed the biomonitoring legislature. Our laboratory and others had a lot of information from California women in particular, as a result of having analyzed and collaborated with many groups and analyzed specimens collected over the last 50 years from different studies. Each study had its own hypothesis, its own design. Nevertheless, we have measurements. So what can we learn from these measurements? So over these 50 years, we can see differences in levels of these POPs over time. We could see difference by age, by ethnicity and race, which is very important in California, country of birth also. And you can compare California levels with other databases, particularly the NHANES, the National Biomonitoring Database, and others. Also, these specimens, after the studies were done and completed and published, we had permission to look at new chemicals on, for example, the hydroxy PCBs and hydroxy PBDs, which are the metabolites, or others like BPA, the perfluorinated chemicals, triclosan. Beyond the need for the study, this is a good repository. You can go back and see what was there in the 80s, what was there in the 60s, and we've done that. So let me start with dioxin and furans, because this is the emphasis of this Vietnam session. As we said, they're inadvertently formed by thermal or chemical processes, and the main exposure route is diet. This is now the exceptions, what we heard so far. Seveso is an exception, it's an accident. In Vietnam, you can consider it an accident, so it wasn't the usual. But for the rest of us, it's what we eat. It's mostly fatty fish, meat, and dairy. And we already heard about ITQ, which is the summary measure of the toxicity of all the 17 major congeners of dioxins. So the data we have from California are, we had small studies, as Brent, I think, mentioned. It's very expensive, very time-consuming to produce these numbers. So we had the adipose study from a surgery study back in 1988 from the San Francisco Bay Area. And we also had another study that, again, from the Bay Area, 10 years later, breast cancer, and we're looking here at the controls only. In addition to adipose, we had milk from first-time mothers, again, the same year, 1998, from the general Bay Area. And these are the three groups I'm going to contrast. Now, sociodemographics are very different. All, obviously, breast cancer controls were older than first-time mothers. If we plot the information, the TCD, this is TQ altogether, TQ, with age, and you can see that the blood, the milk was the younger women, obviously, and the adipose was the older women. We see this trend with age. As expected, the older you are, the higher levels of dioxins. Or look at it the other way, the encouraging thing is that younger people have less dioxins now because of different controls. So we saw that. And when we compare the adipose from 88, this is the mean, total TQ, with the adipose of 98, we have a drop. So we can see on the same tissue, over 10 years, we see a drop in California women. And when we compare the milk and the adipose from the same year, again, this is the age effect, younger milk, older adipose, we see the drop. So we have a trend. We think dioxin is not a big problem anymore in California. Anyhow, it was lower than these horizontal lines, which were the averages from the national program, in, respectively, in 87 or 2000. So we can say that if we look at specific congeners here, one thing I should show that TCDD was so low. This is TCDD here. So the contribution to the total TQ is very small for most people if we leave out the accidental exposures in Seveso or Vietnam. So this is a regular profile for all Americans, but it's a little lower in California. And the if you can see the red, which is the most, the latest adipose, were always lower than in the past. So we have a significant drop. So some of them were 20 to 50% decrease in the body burdens from 88 to 98. The thing we found also, concentrations increased with age and decreased with parity and lactation. I didn't show data, but we had this from the questionnaires. And the concentrations in California were lower than the U.S. wide and Haines. So far, so good. Dioxins are dropping. But then we have the polybrominated diphenylethers. These are flame retardants. They're used extensively in foam and fabrics and electronics, consumer electronics, supposedly to protect for fires. Now we know they don't do much good, but we have them everywhere. So California has among the highest levels in the world in human adipose, serum, milk. Anywhere we looked, the levels are very high. Similarly, very high levels in wildlife that we looked, everywhere in waste streams, in dust. It's everywhere. And this is really coming from the flammability standard that California has had, because now it stopped and hopefully it will change. And by law, after 2006, new products should not contain more than 0.1% of the penta and octa formulation, but there's no enforcement. So we still don't know what we have and what comes in from imports or even manufactured here. This is from over 10 years ago when we first stumbled upon this very high level. So this red bar, this was California, BD47, one of the major PBDEs in blood that we measured. And this was so much higher than anything that was reported at the time from Japan and Sweden and Germany and Canada. So we measured hundreds and hundreds of blood samples from the 60s, and we couldn't see anything of the PBDs. So it wasn't present. It was below detection. But everything else was high. So our levels were higher than Europe, Asia, Brazil at the time. We also observed extreme values. So these are very skewed distributions. So we hypothesized that hotspots, and that's because we don't get exposed from through the diet where everyone eats the same things, but it's the dust. It's some hot spots where you have some electronics or some foam. And we also find very high levels in children because children have more contact with the soil, with the dust, with the hand-to-mouth contact. Another class I want to talk about, thinking about what other chemicals there are to measure, PCBs and organochlorine pesticides, they were banned in the U.S. from the 70s. In some other countries, use continued, and maybe still continue. I'm not sure in Vietnam when these chemicals were banned, if they have been banned. Here I'm going to show PCBs and some pesticides comparing U.S.-born women. And these were studies where samples were collected in the 90s. This is the red bars, and in the 60s. And it's striking to see how concentrations in the pesticides, DDTs and DDE and beta-HCH, have dropped so much from the 60s to the 90s. On the other hand, PCBs have not changed that much. From another study where we compared all collected in the same time period in the late 90s, we had a study of Laotian immigrants in the Bay Area here. This is in blue. Mexicans in the Bay Area in yellow, and U.S. in, this is exactly, if I go back, well, I'm not going to go back. This is the same slide I had before. So the red we had before was in the 90s U.S., and now these values are dwarfed when you compare with the, in pesticides, Mexicans particularly have very high pesticides, and also Laotians. On the other hand, more industrialized U.S. has higher PCBs. So country of birth is so important here. And especially in California, this is from the census of the 2000 census. I haven't updated this chart. But this is the people in California who have been born outside of California, outside of the states. And, of course, Mexico is the biggest country that sends people here, but others from Central America, and also China, Vietnam, and other Asian countries. So we have a lot of... I forgot my conclusions here. So starting with the dioxins, we have significant drop from the 60s to the 90s. But country of birth predicts levels of many persistent organic pollutants. And it's very important in California because I showed you the diversity in population, and over a quarter of the population is non-U.S. born. Now, NHANES does not track Asians alone, so it's very important for the California Biomonitoring Program to track the Asians because of so much, so many of them are here and there's no data. We also found parity being important, and we saw a downward trend in all the chemical concentrations with parity, and in some cases it was statistically significant for certain chemicals. So that's important to ask in any questionnaire. Now, in addition to those persistent organic pollutants, we're planning to study chemicals of emerging concern or re-emerging concern. So, for example, the metabolites, the hydroxymetabolites of PCBs and PBDs are better markers of exposure to PCBs and PBDs, so you know, prevent some misclassification here if you measure the metabolite rather than the parent compound. Also, pentachlorophenol and triclosan, these are disinfectants, and I'll show you a slide later on. Other chemicals are, of course, the new BFRs, because with the banning of PBDs, other chemicals are in place. Cycloxyloxane, these are to replace perchloroethylene in dry cleaning and also found in many personal care products. So these are new chemicals, and we need new methods and we need new approaches to assess where we are. This is a slide showing, for example, in the 60 serum, in blue, pentachlorophenol was very prevalent, but in the contemporary serum is very low. We don't get exposed so much to pentachlorophenol. It's not used that much. In contrast, triclosan was non-measurable, was below detection in the 60s, but now it's present in everyone in contemporary serum. So, I guess... what have we learned, and can this be applied for a study of biomonitoring in Vietnam? So for dioxins, knowing that Vietnam was certain areas were only sprayed, and whether the plumes of these areas or the sediments or the rivers have been, depending on where this plume may have gone, these areas are contaminated, and food grown in these regions may be contaminated, but not the rest of the country. So some spatial trends, some comparison would be very valid to do. And of course, time trends, and again, if indeed they go and bioremediate in the future, there would be a good comparison of areas where there was intervention or there was no intervention. With organochlorine pesticides, given that I suppose this is agriculture, a lot of agriculture in Vietnam, what pesticides have been used or are used for agriculture or vector control. PBDEs, in addition to consumer products and first-hand use, there may be e-waste recycling, like there are in India and China, and we know of the tremendous impacts in the local communities and in local areas of that. So from what we learned from California, these are what I can recommend to Arnie and to all the other groups that work with Vietnam to think about if they are conducting a study there. So, try to do it fast.
Thank you for that exciting paper, which is now open for discussion. Question, Jean?
Yeah, I just have a question about the informative for possibly for Vietnam. Yes. Thinking about it as a model, like, mm-hmm. and I know it's been going for a while, like how it's done, and maybe if, you know, in hindsight, what you would change about it, or, you know,
okay.
more funding so you could do more sampling.
You said it. So in 2006, the bill, you know, this was a legislative program, so we got funded to do biomonitoring, and the bill wanted to have, the sponsors of the bill wanted to have, on one hand, statewide, California and Haines, like a representative cross-section of Californians, but also do some focus studies for special populations, of special interests, special areas of concern. So after the euphoria of the first year, the budget hit. So after that, we're only forced to do the smaller studies because the statewide, statistically, and the recruiting will be impossible. So what's happening now, we have two studies almost completed, recruiting women and newborns, so mothers and newborns from the San Francisco General Hospital area, and this was mostly low-income women. And the other study was an occupational cohort of firefighters. So we have mostly men firefighters, two very different groups. In addition, now we have other study that is in progress now with the Kaiser Permanente members from Central Valley. So we're still collecting samples from there. And the plan is to go hopefully to the perinatal repository that California has for all the births, if we can have access to those specimens. Whatever we can, we collaborate with other groups, UCSF or others who may have specimens from California that are relevant and make sense, so we can generate data without the expense of going to the field and doing all this recruitment. And so wish us luck and vote for 30.
A quick question. You mentioned for dioxin that the bioaccumulation was in fatty fish, meats, and
dairy
and milk. For the PBDEs, you said that under Title 117 that it's mostly dust, not ingestion.
It's not ingestion yet.
Not food.
No, there is food too. There is food.
So my question is, given that Vietnam is a natural experiment, you have a Buddhist monk population which largely do not eat meat.
They're hard to find. For many years.
Except in the very deep south. You got to go to like Happy End to really find the hardcores. But you got to go to the Champa population. But the question is, since there was some overlap in the spraying areas, can we determine, based on that kind of study, whether it is more food-based or dust-based in terms of the further generations of exposure?
For dioxins, I mean, arnica, I think it's food because it bioconcentrates in the fatty tissues.
So
for the dioxins.
For the dioxins, yeah.
For PBDE, it's food and dust.
So in Vietnam, can there be an educational campaign?
There is.
And they're so foody. Yeah. They're the most foody people.
Well, preparing for this talk, I Googled some things and I found that there was a story that in many of the craters from the bombs, the government, after they were liberated, they encouraged people to grow fish or something.
Fish farming.
Yeah, so these fish in those ponds were so contaminated. Yeah, so that was one of the problems. So it's in the fatty fish and properly in the rivers. And
it's hard to find.
Yeah, can your study in California segment for members of the Vietnamese American community who we might believe many of whom were working with the Americans and therefore were handling
But there were very few in Vietnam. We tried very hard for decades to find that. We could find some small numbers of people in sprayed areas or the hot spots in Vietnam, Vietnamese people with elevated TCDD. Very hard to find. And the Vietnamese in America have resisted very much.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's unpatriotic.
Right. But when you said ethnicity, I would assume that you could track diseases by ethnicity.
Well, so far we didn't design a study to track Vietnamese per se. Yeah.
I mean, when California has money again, maybe you'll do it. Last
question.
Yeah.
People
standing on the door.
Why
PPE
are so high in California?
I might have
Yeah. I mean, California had a flammability standard to protect from structural fires, consumer products, and the foam, the chairs, the padding of the carpet, or the consumer electronics had to pass the flammability test. Yes, we did that in Japan.
You should tell them.
Yeah. Well, Brandon and Arnie and I were in Japan in 2010 at the BFR, the Bromine Flame Retardant meeting. We had a small group meeting talking about the flammability standard, and Brandon turns up a chair upside down.
On the floor
and here it is. You can see that the tag, which says, you know, complies with California flammability standard, and we don't want that. Well, California is a large economy, so manufacturers that make something for California, so North America in general,
right,
with Canadians are also.
Yeah, but California is definitely worse than the rest of the United States.
Yeah.
Because of TB-117. And there's a campaign to review and modify that, which is likely to be successful.
Yes. So that has been suspended, it's going to be changed, and
yeah.
It's in process.
Yeah, in process.
Okay. People are pounding down the doors to get in.